This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He's in London, which is why I enjoy now throwing up mysteries about the American economy to Joe, who watches it very carefully with his column Political Economics, which is Europe and the UK's economy, but we're all integrated now as trading partners. I begin, Joe, with the mystery of the job surge of recent days. The Wall Street gurus predicted something like 185 or 190,000 jobs gain in the previous month. Instead, what came in was well in excess of 300,000 jobs. In other words, the miss was about double. And that led to everybody going, look at that. Now, I'm looking at that and asking the adjoining question. Where's the recession with this scale of jobs surging? What is the Federal Reserve making of the fact that it's been raising rates for a year and we're still hiring?
Well, this is indicative of the theoretical mess that the Fed keeps getting itself into. If you take the Fed out of it and ignore their theories for a minute, if you have inflation, strong employment should be a good sign because that equates to more supply in the economy. I mean, people are not hired to sit around doing nothing. They are hired to create goods or provide services that other people in the economy find useful. So it is kind of striking that economists are so convinced that more employment must necessarily be a bad thing because their models tell them that it must be inflationary. I mean, I think that the real thing that is inflationary is that, it's difficult to get even more people back to work because you have policies that are still keeping a lot of workers on the sidelines of the labor market instead of moving back into work after the pandemic. And you have a lot of regulatory policies and the like that make it difficult for businesses to invest productively in providing the goods and services that people want to buy. With that little rant out of the way, I mean, clearly the Fed thinks that strong employment is a problem because their models do tell them that this will trigger a wage price spiral, despite the fact that obviously the inflation is already pretty well established and wages have not caught up to it in inflation adjusted terms. So, more people are working, but they're somehow worse off in terms of their purchasing power. And so the Fed is going to convince itself that these strong employment data create a dilemma where they need to keep raising interest rates in order to suppress employment. Now, I mean, since we do have entrenched inflation, you can make an argument that perhaps they do need to continue tightening monetary policy, but I will worry that they will insist on looking at the labor market as the measure of their success or otherwise, when they should just be looking at the inflation data.
There is a Fed meeting coming up in a week, and so we will continue the guessing of which way the Fed's going to go. Remember, they're reading the data. But for fun, I wanted to read through a list of the assumptions of the Fed by the Fed and about the Fed, depending on the market gurus, for the last 5 months. This is from Brent Donnelly's Substack newsletter, Friday Speed Run, which I recommend. It's a lot of fun and is about the economy we're all staring at. Here are the conventional wisdom for the last 5 months in red quickly. U.S. hard landing and recession. U.S. soft landing. U.S. no landing. Acceleration. China reopening. Consumption boom. China slowdown, disinflationary balance sheet recession, inflationary boom in Germany and Europe, recession in Germany and peak inflation. Regional bank crisis in the U.S. may signal end of U.S. hegemony. Fed's going to cut in July. Fed's going to hike in July. OPEC production cuts will take oil back up through the highs. OPEC doesn't matter. They have lost control. All right, I'll stop there, Joe. I fall exhausted. We're ready for the next conventional wisdom. This tells me that nobody knows nothing. So why does the Fed believe that data is going to help them? What is the magic there?
Well, I mean, what the Fed does have is a big model of the economy, basically akin to a very complicated spreadsheet that they think that they can use to predict where things are going. But I mean, the thing that strikes me about that list, which is absolutely an accurate representation of the wild ride that we have been on lately in terms of people's varied and quickly shifting expectations for the economy, is that this is actually what financial markets exist to do. I mean, the whole point of having a market is to digest a lot of conflicting information and a lot of varied and conflicting guesses about the future, and to try to digest the and price all of those various estimates of the risk of the future path of the economy. And so I think that the bigger picture and perhaps somewhat more optimistic gloss on this is that markets are learning how to be markets again after an extended period of time where the central bank would just tell the markets what was going to happen and that would end up coming true. I think it's ultimately healthy for there to be this degree of uncertainty because it's all going to force the markets to do their job again. And we should start having some less predictability about things, and we should start having again some more sophisticated risk pricing.
The word recession came up several times. We actually have a declaration of the word recession confirmed, but it's in Germany, and it's not what you'd call a stark recession. I think the polite word is a shallow, but no recession here. I read in the Wall Street Journal, your newspaper, I read in the Wall Street Journal that the disappointment in the recession arriving any moment now, everybody's predicted. I think 99% of all the gurus say sometime in the next 6 months, it keeps moving, is because we still have cash left over that gives us buying power from the pandemic. Do you accept that as an explanation for why there's hiring and why there's consuming and why there's no recession?
I think that that is a very plausible explanation for some of what we're seeing in the economy, but I think that the problem is that that might end up not helping us because I mean, the great question and the great fear is going to be that all of that cash is in the wrong parts of the economy in order to avert a problem. So, I mean, on the one hand, consumers are doing quite well, but there are real serious concerns about areas such as commercial real estate, where office occupancy and rents have not recovered after the pandemic and may not do so for a long time. And that is highly leveraged, very susceptible to increases in interest rates. And rates have gone up very rapidly over the past year or so. And so that sets up a situation where even though the consumer spending could be quite healthy for a while, you can still have problems on bank balance sheets as some of these issues in commercial real estate or other areas begin popping up. And then you end up with problems in the financial system anyway, which have big impacts on the economy. And I'm not necessarily predicting that that's going to happen, and I very much hope that it won't, because it would be pretty bad for the economy. But I do think that it's an example of how there are a lot of dangers in a lot of different places right now.
Yes, Joe is introducing us to the part of a video game where the music changes because the boss is coming, or somebody who works for the boss. You don't know how close you are to the end. The commercial real estate market. This amazing opening paragraph in the Wall Street Journal report. Nearly $1.5 trillion in commercial mortgages are coming due over the next 3 years, according to data provider TREP. Many of the commercial landlords on the hook for the loans, writes the Wall Street Journal, are vulnerable to default in part because of the way their loans are structured. It's called interest only. You pay the principal at the end of the life of the mortgage or the agreement. And what we're talking about are major cities where already the debtor is turning the keys over to the lender and walking away. Joe, is this something we're prepared to deal with over the next 3 years? And are we talking about damage to the economy at a scale like 2009?
I think this is potentially a very serious problem for several reasons. First off, it illustrates the extent to which the ultra-low interest rates and quantitative easing of the past 13 years really badly distorted the economy, because you had this huge inflation in lending for and the prices of commercial real estate. It was completely divorced from their productivity. So you think of how that money could have been put to much better use, building factories or funding R&D or any of the rest of it, and yet it ended up in this huge overhang of commercial real estate, which now is going to need to be potentially written down in some way. And then the other problem is that a lot of the banks that are exposed to these tend to be mid-sized or smaller regional or community banks who have engaged in a lot of this lending over the years. And so if they're forced to take write-downs on these portfolios, they are not going to be as ready to lend to productive entrepreneurial small businesses in their areas. So it can very quickly spiral out into consequences for the broader economy that are pretty serious. So I think this is a major concern. And again, I'm not necessarily going to predict disaster, and I am definitely not going to hope for disaster. But I do think that we need to understand that this is one of the risks that is lurking out there right now.
The puzzle I have for what we're looking at here is that this is a product of the pandemic. This is a product of work from home. This is a product of the mixed messages that corporations and companies and entrepreneurs are either receiving or giving to their employees, from San Francisco to LA to Seattle to Chicago to New York to Philadelphia. And until and if City Center is restored, if it ever will be, these buildings are at permanent risk. That's different from over-leveraging if you're a bank. That means that the future is profoundly, what is the word here? Risky, Joe? What do you, how do you write down a pandemic's work from home lessons?
Well, this is a really interesting debate that is starting, because I think that that certainly is a big part of this. I mean, one of the reasons that the property owners are going to be coming under stress is that the properties are just worth less, to the extent that the income that they would expect from rents is diminishing, as more people are working from home or hybrid work becomes more often, more common, and there's less demand for office space. But so there is a pandemic effect there, but I think that it's difficult to separate this out from the pre-pandemic effect of sustained ultra-low interest rates and the effect that that had on property prices and leverage in the commercial real estate sector, because a lot of this lending predated the pandemic, and it is certainly the case that a lot of these borrowers would be facing problems even without the changes to office occupancy that have followed on from the pandemic, just because interest rates are rising. So the problem might be more severe because they're getting hit by the rising interest rates at the same time that their rental income might be falling. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? I mean, you can argue that both of them are equally serious problems, and that we would have been facing difficulties here even without the pandemic, just if the interest rates had started to rise eventually anyway.
Does this mean that Mr. Greenspan, Mr. Bernanke, and Mr. Powell are in the witness dock or in the accused dock? Are we, is it, they were zero interest, right? It's their policy.
Yes, and you forgot Janet Yellen, who
Ah,
is now the
yes.
Treasury Secretary, but was Jerome Powell's predecessor as the Federal Reserve Chairman. Yes, I think that they are absolutely in the dock for whatever happens next, because their theory was that they could use ultra-low interest rates and quantitative easing to stimulate the economy and smooth out the recession that came after the 2008 crisis, and then again smooth out the effects of the pandemic. And the withdrawal of those policies, the return to more normal interest rates, and the quantitative tightening could be accomplished smoothly without creating economic disruption. And I think that it is that assumption, that belief they had that these policies would be easy to reverse, which is the thing that's being tested now and found wanting.
Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes political economics. He's based in London. Life in London next. Prince Harry is back, dominating the news.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.